Bad bunny,
he whispers hotly. Please. His groan is soft. He tugs on my clit, gently pinching it between two fingers to elicit a gasp from me, along with more begging and bottom wiggling. Please, Aiden. Pretty please. In a dark, sensual voice, he says.
Shake that ass one more time and I'll assume you want me to fuck it.
I fall still. Breathing hard, my whole body trembling, I say. Do you want to?
You know I do. Know what else I want?
I can smell him on the sheets. The earthy, warm musk of his body, that indelible, intoxicating scent of a male in his prime. I want to roll around in these sheets like a dog in mud, getting his scent all over me, smothering my skin in that delicious smell so I can never wash it off my body. I whisper. What? He leans down near my ear, so close I feel the heat coming off him in waves.
Everything. I want every fucking thing you have to give me, Kayla. And I want you to give it to me without hesitation, without question, and without regret.
The sheer dominance and desire in his voice makes me shiver. My nipples are hard and my pussy is throbbing, and I'd sign over the deed to my house and everything else I own right now if only he'd hurry up and fuck me. I blurt, okay. To my great disappointment, he says.
No, we're not there yet.
I am. His exhalation is ragged, sending a wash of warm air over my shoulder.
Sweet girl. I love that you said that. But you're not.
He sinks his teeth into my shoulder, making me shudder in desperation. How do we get there?
Time.
He slides a finger inside me, pressing deep. I moan, loving how it feels, but still needing more.
And practice.
He adds another finger, working it inside me as I clench the sheets.
A lot of practice.
He thrusts his fingers in and out, biting me harder as he finger fucks me. I tilt my hips and spread my thighs wider, my heart racing and my body responding to him as if he's playing it like an instrument. Oh, God. Aiden. Into my ear, he softly commands.
Beg me to let you come.
Yes, please, yes. That's exactly what I was going to say. Will you please let me come? I don't care that I'm babbling. I don't care how I must look, writhing around mindlessly underneath him. I don't even care that all it took for me to hand him the reins to my mind and body was a few words spoken in that soft, commanding tone that somehow drives me crazy. All I care about is the fire between my legs that I need him to quench immediately.
Look at you fucking yourself on my fingers.
He growls.
Look at those greedy hips move. Does my bunny not know she's supposed to take what I want to give her?
It's a question that doesn't require an answer, which is good because I'm not capable of speech at the moment anyway. In the most dominant voice he's used yet, Aiden says,
here in this bed, this is what happens. I give, you take, you'll take and you'll take until you break. Then you'll beg me to break you all over again.
On the verge of orgasm, I sob.
Don't you dare let go without my permission.
He growls, thrusting those long, hard fingers inside me over and over again. I make a garbled sound of pleasure and frantically grind against his hand. My eyes roll back into my head. Just as I'm about to tip over the edge, Aiden pulls his fingers out of me. Ignoring my whine of protest, he pulls my jeans down my legs and tosses them away. Then he hikes me up to my knees and gives me a series of fast, stinging slaps on my ass as he grips the back of my neck, holding my head and chest down against the mattress. It's not enough. I want it harder. I want it faster. I want him to ruin me. I want him to make me forget my own name. He stops spanking me the instant I moan. Panting, he says,
talk to me.
The only thing I can manage is a breathy and broken, more. He smooths his hand over my burning bottom and bends down to kiss it. Then I hear the sound of a zipper being ripped open. A moment later, the head of his hard cock nudges my entrance. Through gritted teeth, he says,
repeat the safe word.
Cheesy.
Good girl.
Gripping my hips, he shoves inside me with a guttural grunt. This time, my moan is one of gratitude. Then he fucks me, hard and fast, his fingers digging into my flesh. I feel the cold bite of metal on the back of my thighs and realize he didn't pull his jeans all the way down before taking me. He couldn't wait any longer either. He bends over, reaching beneath me to squeeze my breast. Panting and pulling on my hard nipple, he drives into me relentlessly until my moans are so loud they echo off the walls. My pussy clenches around his cock.
Don't you dare,
he hisses. The warning only makes me hotter. I flex my hips in time to his thrusts, straining to get him as deep as he can go inside me, until suddenly he falls still. Breathing hard, he moves his hand from my breast down between my legs. He slides his fingers all around and strums his fingertips back and forth over my swollen clit. As he undoubtedly knew it would, that instantly makes me orgasm. Crying out, I jerk violently. My pussy convulses, clenching over and over again in hard, rhythmic waves.
Come, baby. Ah, fuck yes. Come for me.
He sounds triumphant. I understand then that forbidding me to climax was part of this game, that he knew every minute I'd hold back would add to my pleasure when I finally let go. And I'm stupidly grateful that he knows what he's doing because this is exactly what I needed. He's exactly what I needed. A handsome stranger with secrets in his eyes and a way of looking at me as if he already knows everything there is to know about me. As if I'm a book he's read 1,000 times and highlighted all his favorite passages. As if he already knows how this is going to end. He falls on top of me, pushing me flat onto my belly on the mattress and trapping me with his weight. With both hands clenched in my hair, he thrusts hard a few more times, then moans my name. Shuddering, he empties himself inside my body. I close my eyes and brace myself against the huge wave of emotion cresting to a peak above me, then surrender to its churning darkness as it crashes down and carries me tumbling far away. 19. Afterward, we don't speak. I don't know if he's feeling as emotionally raw as I am, or if he simply has nothing to say, but he rolls off me and goes into the bathroom, closing the door behind him. The faucet runs, the toilet flushes. He reappears carrying a wet washcloth and a hand towel. He silently pushes me onto my back and wipes the washcloth gently between my legs as I lie there, feeling as if all my bones have turned to liquid. He dries me off with the hand towel, then rises and flips off the light switch. Then he crawls onto the mattress beside me, rolls me to my side, pulls me against his chest, and buries his face in my hair, inhaling deeply. When he exhales, it sounds as if 100 years of pent-up frustrations leave his body in the same breath. Eventually, his breathing slows to a deep, even cadence that tells me he's asleep. I lie there in the dark, enveloped in his warmth, and think about Michael. Was I a good wife? I don't know. I tried to be. More than anything, I wanted to make him happy. He wanted me to be happy too, and I thought we were perfect for each other. All our jagged little pieces matched. We fit. But our relationship was nothing like this. I know it's unfair to make comparisons. I also know it's unfair that I lied to Aiden about being separated from my husband instead of simply telling him the truth. But he caught me off guard. I had no idea anything even remotely like this would happen. I wasn't prepared for the extent of our attraction, for the force of it, for the way I'm drawn to him with an intensity I feel strangely powerless to resist. And so I simply let him believe Michael was still alive. Part of me wants to believe it as well. Part of me wants to believe this isn't the truth. My husband is dead. He fell off our boat and drowned. I watched it happen. Maybe I haven't told Aiden about it because I don't want to relive that last part. The splashing and the screaming. Michael's desperate cries for help growing weaker as the boat drifted farther and farther away. The smell of smoke over the dark water and the awful, brittle laughter that seemed to come from everywhere all around. I didn't tell the detective who interviewed me after the accident about the laughter. It's not exactly something I can explain. I must fall asleep at some point because the next thing I know, The room is light, and Aiden's big hand is gently stroking my bottom. He's still behind me in the same position he was when he fell asleep. He murmurs,
"Morning, sweet bunny. Sleep well."
Turning my head toward him, I inhale and stretch my legs, curling my toes. "I think so. You?" He presses a kiss to my nape. His hand drifts over my hip and down between my legs.
"Like the dead."
That big hard thing poking into my tailbone doesn't feel very dead. He chuckles.
You can't blame him. He's got a beautiful naked woman in his bed.
When he slips his fingers inside my pussy and strokes them over my clit, I sigh in pleasure.
"I'm obsessed with that sound,"
he says, his voice darker.
"With all the sounds you make, I can't get enough of you, Kayla."
He bites me on the shoulder. It's not hard, but it is dominant. Like something an animal would do before it mounts its mate.
"You're shivering."
"It's not from cold."
"I know, baby. Time to sit on my face."
My eyes fly open. "Pardon?"
"You heard me. And from now on, I expect you to obey an order the first time I give it."
My heartbeat surges. I lie still with my mind going a million miles an hour until I venture, hesitantly, "I want to ask you something, but I don't want you to think I'm being disobedient. I'm just trying to figure out the rules." He kisses my shoulder, then my neck. Actually, kissing isn't really what he's doing. It's more like licking and sucking, as if he's tasting my skin and finds it delicious. Nibbling my earlobe, he whispers,
"Ask your master for permission to speak."
Oh, God. Oh, dear holy God in heaven, this is actually happening. He just said that. Calmly lavishing my shoulders and neck with his lips and tongue, Aiden lazily strokes his fingers back and forth over my clit, which is now achingly sensitive. My nipples are too. So is my entire nervous system, which feels as if it's about to explode. Hyperventilating, I whisper, "May I please have permission to speak, Master?" His voice low and hypnotic, he says,
"Yes, my perfect, pretty bunny rabbit. You may."
And he presses his teeth to the side of my throat and slides a finger inside me. My cry of pleasure is soft and broken. It takes me a moment to remember what the hell I was going to say. I don't know exactly what you mean by sit on your face.
It's not rocket science.
Yes, but I mean logistically. How does it work? Do I, like, brace my hands against the wall for balance? He sounds surprised.
You've never done it before.
No, and I don't want to smother you. His laughter is muffled against my skin. Then he groans.
Fucking hell, you're sweet. You're so goddamn sweet. I just want to sink my teeth into every inch of you.
You're doing a pretty good job of that so far. He rolls me to my back and cups my face in his hand, gazing intently down at me, he says.
What else haven't you done?
Everything that doesn't include missionary or doggy style with the lights out. Oh, and oral. But nothing.
What?
My cheeks are heating up. Damn them. Kinky.
Define kinky.
I think you know what I mean, mister. He's trying not to laugh at me. Pressing his lips together, his eyes alight, he shakes his head.
It's master or sir. No misters. I'll give you one free pass, but next time, disrespect will earn you a spanking.
I smile up at him. You say that like you don't already know I love it when you give me a spanking. He stares at me in silence for a moment, his laughter fading. Then his voice comes out rough.
I wish you knew how perfect you are, how different and perfect. I've never met anyone like you. Whenever we're together, I feel like a new man. A better man. Like everything bad that's ever happened to me doesn't matter anymore, because your sweet smile takes it all away.
Warmth washes over me. It seems as if the sky just opened up, and I'm being bathed in a brilliant ray of sunshine from head to toe. Feeling shy, I whisper, "What a nice thing to say. Thank you." He stares at me, his gaze moving slowly over my features, Then he kisses me deeply, his hand still cupped around my face. Against my mouth, he murmurs,
I'm gonna lie on my back and you're gonna straddle my face, baby. Don't worry about smothering me. I'll hold you up. Ready?
Shimmering with need and embarrassment, I whisper, Yes, sir. When he exhales with the faintest of moans, I know I've pleased him. It frightens me how much I suddenly want to please him again. He rolls onto his back and pulls me on top of him, clasping his hands around my waist. He urges me up toward the wall, so I climb forward on my hands and knees as he scoots lower down the mattress. When my knees are on either side of his head, he pulls me down by my hips until my pussy hovers right above his mouth, and I'm looking down between my spread legs at him. He warns,
Don't come until I give you permission.
And latches onto my clit with his mouth. I gasp. My thighs quiver. My lids flutter shut. He stabilizes me by gripping my hips, then reaches up around my hips with both hands and squeezes my breasts. He fondles my breast and pinches my nipples as he licks my pussy, and I doubt my head will ever be set on straight again. When I moan softly, he takes one hand away from my breast and slaps me on the ass. It's hard and it stings, and I love it. I flatten my hands against the mattress and lock my elbows. I flex my hips against Aiden's mouth. He makes a soft sound of approval, so I flex my hips again. He pulls on my hard nipple and slaps my ass, making me groan loudly in pleasure.
Fuck my mouth,
he orders.
Ride my face, baby. Don't make me tell you again.
Okie dokie, sir. I grind my pussy against his face, laughing breathlessly when he shoves his tongue deep inside me. The laughter dies quickly because his mouth feels so damn good. I stop worrying that I might smother him and really get into it, concentrating on the feel of his hot, wet mouth between my legs and his calloused fingers pinching my nipple and digging into my hips. A sharp contraction of my uterus makes me moan. Still playing with my nipple, Aiden slides a finger inside me and sucks my clit with more force. I whisper raggedly, Oh, Aiden. Oh, God. That feels amazing.
You need to come?
Yes, please.
Not yet.
He eats me until I'm moaning brokenly. My thighs are shaking hard, and I'm certain I'll fall over before I can climax. Then he drags his fingernails down my back, shoulder blades to ass cheeks, and laughs into my flesh when I shudder.
You need to come, baby.
Yes, please.
Then you better earn it.
Before I can decipher what that might mean, he pulls me down by the hips, forcing me to crawl backward a foot or so. Then he flips around beneath me, positioning himself on his back so his hard cock juts up toward my mouth, and my knees are on either side of his head again. He orders,
Suck my cock, bunny.
And buries his face in my pussy. I grasp his erection in one hand and lower my head to lick the crown. Aiden hums in pleasure, a sound that vibrates deliciously through my pelvis. Then he flattens a hand on the small of my back and forces me to lie on his stomach, skin to skin, as he lavishes my pussy with his tongue and I suck on his dick. He thrusts up into my mouth. I flex my hips against his tongue. We're both moaning and frantic, our skin slick with sweat, and if he doesn't give me permission to come soon, I will anyway. When I make a high, whining noise in the back of my throat, he knows I can't hold out any longer.
Swallow my cum. Then you have my permission to orgasm,
he says, panting.
But not before. You ready?
I make a desperate sound of assent around his hard cock and keep sucking and sliding my hand up and down his shaft.
Good girl.
Swirling his tongue around and around my engorged clit, he thrusts up into my mouth, stretching my lips open until my eyes are watering and I'm fighting the urge to gag. Then he grabs the back of my neck and squeezes it. He climaxes with a grunt, spilling hot semen onto my tongue in thick pulses. I suck and swallow over and over again, breathing through my nose, my entire body trembling. Still gripping the back of my neck, Aiden spanks my ass 3 times hard, then shoves a finger deep inside my pussy. Choking on his cock, I convulse around his finger.
That's my perfect good girl.
He growls, thrusting with his hips, driving his cock deeper down my throat.
Swallow every fucking drop as you come for me.
Blind with pleasure, helplessly jerking, I sob around his erection and do as I'm told. He praises me with words I hear but don't understand. I'm somewhere far off, hurtling through space, my mind ablaze with fireworks, my body utterly beyond my control. I'm a stranger to myself at this moment, someone with no limits and no worries. A woman at once perfectly at peace yet completely astonished by her actions. He's pulled a string I didn't know I had hidden inside and unraveled me from the inside out. Then he flips me onto my back, tosses my ankles up over his shoulders, shoves his still hard cock inside me, and unravels me all over again. 20. Later, I lie beside him, my head resting on his chest, my leg thrown over his, my body boneless. I'm a bowl of jiggly jello, quaking and spent. I've never felt so alive. Gazing up at the ceiling, Aiden murmurs,
"Need to ask you a question, and I need you to be honest when you answer."
I wait silently. He didn't give me permission to speak, and I'm still not really clear how and when all these rules of his apply, so I stay on the safe side and say nothing. His chest rises and falls with a deep breath.
"What are the chances of you getting back together with your husband?"
A sudden sharp jab of pain stabs me beneath my sternum. I squeeze my eyes shut against it. 0.
"Yeah?"
"Yes."
"Then why are you still wearing your wedding ring?"
I think about it for a moment. I don't really know. Habit, I suppose. Does it bother you?
"Yes and no."
He doesn't explain himself further. I get the sense he's waiting for me to say something, but I can't be sure. "May I please ask a question?" He murmurs,
"Sweet bunny, you can always ask me anything."
"Really?"
"Why do you sound surprised?"
"Because I'm not sure when we're doing the permission thing and when we aren't, and I don't want to get into trouble." I add more softly, "Or displease you." His groan is low. Pulling me closer, he kisses the top of my head.
"Kayla,"
he whispers,
"everything about you pleases me."
Snuggling closer to him, I smile. "You can see my problem, though, right? I mean, I don't have any experience with this kind of thing." He rolls me onto my back and lifts up to an elbow, staring down at me with blazing intent.
"Me neither."
I laugh right into his face. "Well, that's a total lie."
"I wasn't talking about sex."
My laughter dies. Confused, I gaze up at him with knitted brows. "Then what are you talking about?" He flattens his hand over my chest, right above my heart.
"This. Us. You and me. How it's so easy. How it's so simple. How it just feels right. But you're still wearing your wedding ring, and you don't feel comfortable kissing me in your house. And that tells me everything I need to know about where your head's at. And I get it. I really do. Your whole life has been turned upside down. It's understandable that you're not ready for this. But I gotta be honest. I won't be a rebound. I won't be the guy you distract yourself with for a while to make yourself feel better and walk away when you do. So I think I should cut my losses now before I get my heart shredded. Because I can already tell you're gonna wreck me if this goes on much longer and you leave."
That knocks the breath out of me. I lie there, staring up at him with wide eyes and a pounding heart, shocked by his honesty. When I pull myself together, I discover to my surprise that I'm really freaking mad. I say firmly, "No." Dark eyes burning, he stares at me. His silence makes me even angrier. "You don't get to decide how this is going to go before it's gone anywhere, Aiden. I understand not wanting to be a rebound, but you could just say, 'Hey, well, take it slow,' or 'Let's talk about your expectations here.' But instead, you unilaterally decide you're breaking up with me? Before we're even officially an item? Fuck that. That's not how this works. You can boss me around in bed all you want, but when it comes to making decisions about our relationship, we're doing that shit together. I refuse to be a one-night stand." After a moment of blistering silence, he says gruffly,
"It's already more than a one-night stand."
"Fine, a three-night stand, whatever." I glare at him until something in his eyes melts.
"Relationship? That's what you're calling this?"
I said what I said. Deal with it.
"Oh, Bunny,"
He breathes, a thrill in his voice.
You're this close to getting the spanking of your life?
I want to drum my heels against the mattress in frustration, and maybe scream a little too. But I lie still with my lips pressed together and my nostrils flared, internally shouting curses at him. Then I remember that I don't have a single goddamn leg to stand on. My anger is misplaced. He's not the one holding back an important detail about their personal life here. That's all me. But then I remind myself that I have absolutely no idea what the man is or isn't holding back, other than he owns a roofing company, has a friend named Jake he's known since high school, and that he may or may not have unalived his own father. I know zilch, which makes this entire conversation all the more bizarre for both of us. I close my eyes and exhale a hard breath. Aiden commands,
"Eyes on me, Kayla."
I open my eyes and glare at him. Oh, are we back to master and slave again? Pardon me while I go online to find a chiropractor to treat my whiplash. He drops his head and puts his mouth next to my ear.
Do you have any idea how hard I want to spank you right now?
I can't help myself. I smile. The feeling is mutual. He rolls on top of me, smashing me into the mattress with his body weight. Oh! I flail weakly at his back, slapping him. You're crushing me!
You love it,
he murmurs, holding my head between both hands and gazing down at me with hot eyes.
Now stop bleating and listen to me.
I fall still, flinging my arms down to the mattress a little too dramatically, as evidenced by the quirk of his lips.
Trauma queen.
Tyrant.
You bet your sweet ass I am, and you like that about me.
He waits for confirmation while I glower at his chin.
Kayla.
I know what that warning tone in his voice means. I exhale, rolling my eyes. Okay, yes, I like it. I can't resist adding. Usually. Chuckling, he kisses the tip of my nose.
Brat, as I was saying.
His voice drops to a whisper.
Thank you.
Damn, he sure has a way of taking me by surprise. For what? He shakes his head, which I take to mean I won't get an explanation. I say brightly, hey, I have an idea.
What's that?
Why don't you teach me sign language, so that when you suddenly decide you don't want to use your words anymore, we can still keep talking? My stare is pointed. His glower is dark. Then I smile at him because he obviously got my point, and I'm not really in the mood for more arguing. I wrap my arms around his back. Knowing full well what the answer is already, I ask innocently, so are you ending it with me or what? I can't decide if his expression is admiration or aggravation. Maybe a combo of both. He says bluntly,
you want me to?
Oh, crap, he turned it back around on me. No. Searching my eyes for any sign of ambivalence, he says more softly,
you're sure? It's not too late to walk away from this.
I'm unsure if it's my imagination or not, but it seems as if there's a vague threat buried in there somewhere. As if he thinks there's an invisible line in the sand we haven't quite crossed yet, but once we do, there's no turning back for either of us. I slide my hands over his shoulders and into his hair. Staring into his eyes, I nod.
Say it out loud,
he orders. I'm sure. After a long period of silence, he pronounces,
okay.
I dissolve into disbelieving laughter. God, you're nuts. His dark eyes glittering, he says softly,
you have no idea.
Right back at you, stud. After a shower and a serving of Aiden's awesome scrambled eggs, I tell him I should probably get going. Sitting across from me at his kitchen table, he shovels a forkful of eggs into his mouth. He doesn't respond until long after he's finished chewing and swallowed. I'm not sure if he's deliberately taking a moment to think about his response or if he's just really into those eggs. Looking at his plate, he asks,
you got things to do today?
I'm behind on work. He nods thoughtfully. What are you up to?
I work on the house on Sundays.
What house?
My house.
Surprised, I say. You have a house? He glances up at me and nods.
Building one on the other side of the island.
You're building a house? From scratch?
No, from origami swans.
I smile at him. There's that devastating sense of humor again. Seriously, you're really building a house from the ground up? He gives me a look like I should already know he's fully capable of that and any other project he might set his mind to. Like, say, constructing a spacecraft from recycled aluminum cans. Wow, Aiden, that's impressive. He nods, turning his attention back to his eggs. Can I see it? He freezes. His eyes flash up to mine. He says gruffly,
You want to?
Of course I do. Why are you shocked? He shakes his head and looks down at his plate. I impatiently let him ruminate on his answer, knowing he might never provide one, but holding out hope. Then he says quietly,
Still not sure what the parameters are.
It's not a lot, but it's enough. Me neither. How about if we figure it out as we go along? He glances up to meet my gaze.
Or we could decide right now.
Is that what you want? His nod is curt. I smile at him and tease. So we're negotiating. He says sourly.
Funny.
It's just that I remember how it's your favorite thing. Without missing a beat, he says.
Being inside you is my favorite thing. Making you come is my favorite thing. Knowing you don't do one-night stands, but you made an exception for me, is my favorite thing. Everything else now is a distant second.
I chew on the inside of my neck as my ears grow hot. He says more softly,
Tell me to stop talking like that, and I will. I don't want to scare you.
I consider him. In a simple white t-shirt and jeans, he's tense and unsmiling, and so handsome it seems impossible. Holding his gaze, I say, You know you don't scare me.
I meant scare you away.
I know what you meant. My answer's the same. We stare at each other across the table until he pushes his plate away and sits back in his chair. His voice low and his gaze burning, he says,
Come here.
He's got that predatory look in his eyes again, as if he's the hunter and I'm his prey. Every nerve ending in my body responds to it, standing on end at full attention. My pulse, respiration, and body temperature jump. Moistening my lips, I stand and slowly walk around the table. As soon as I'm within reach, he grabs my wrist and pulls me down onto his lap. He sinks his hands into my hair and brings my face close to his as I flatten my hands over his pecs. Gazing deep into my eyes, he says gruffly,
Tell me what you want.
I don't even have to think about it. To keep doing this, to get to know you better, to spend time with you and see where it goes. He licks his lips. His gaze drops to my mouth.
What else?
I swallow nervously, then whisper, To please you.
You don't have to say that.
I know. His breathing turns ragged. His erection digs into my bottom. Beneath my palms, his heart drums a fast staccato beat.
Give your lion a kiss, bunny. Make it sweet.
The roughness of his tone and the need in his eyes makes me tremble. I take his face in my hands and press a soft kiss to his mouth. Then I rub my cheek against his, closing my eyes and sighing in pleasure as his beard tickles my skin. He murmurs my name. Yes, sir. A delicate little shudder runs through his chest when I call him that. He mutters,
Christ, you're going to be the death of me, aren't you?
Oh, come on, Fight Club. You're tough. You can handle it. He kisses me, devouring my mouth, softly groaning into it as he holds my head steady and takes what he needs. When he breaks the kiss, we're both breathing hard. He gazes into my eyes with an expression of agony. Surprised, I trace a fingertip over his bottom lip and whisper, Aiden, what is it? He clenches his teeth so hard, a muscle in his jaw flexes. The shake of his head is short and final. He's not going to tell me what's wrong. I sigh again, foreseeing a lot of this silent nonsense in our future. May I please have permission to tell you that you're a pain in the ass? A hint of humor surfaces in the dark depths of his eyes.
Careful, sweet rabbit.
I blink innocently. Oh, did I not do that right? He lowers his lids and gazes at me as a dangerous growl rumbles through his chest. Okay, fine. I'll be good. Smiling, I give him a peck on the lips. Can we go see your house now? I can't wait to find out what kind of place a Lion King builds for himself. I hope you remembered to leave space on the walls to hang all the bunny rabbit pelts you must have collected. Releasing his fist from my hair, he cups my face and kisses me softly.
The walls are bare,
he murmurs.
I never wanted to catch a bunny before now.
Inside my belly, a million tiny butterflies take flight all at once. They drop to the ground, killed by a sudden Arctic freeze when Aiden adds firmly,
"But it's time for you to go home."
I grumble. "Wow, talk about a buzzkill. I see all that time you spent in charm school was a total waste of money."
"You said you need to work. I won't get in the way of that. Use that smart tone with me again and you'll earn yourself..."
"I know, a spanking."
"No, you like it too much. It's a reward. Next time you sass me, you'll be punished."
I assess his serious face with narrowed eyes. "Punished how?"
"Try me and find out."
He smiles at my poisonous expression. Then he sets me on my feet, stands, and walks me to the front door. Opening it, he says,
"I'll talk to you soon. In the meantime..."
He gives my ass a swat.
"Stay out of trouble."
He leans down, gives me a firm, quick kiss, pushes me over the threshold, then shuts the door in my face. "Miffed," I shout. "Goodbye, Aiden!" From the other side of the door comes a low laugh.
"See you later, Kayla."
I head down the stairs to the parking lot, wondering why he never says the word goodbye, and why he avoided my questions about it both times I asked him. More mysteries to add to his growing collection. I'm lost in thought as I get in the car and start it, but freeze when I see what's sitting on the dashboard above the steering wheel. A 1937 D-type Buffalo Nickel. 21. I stare at the coin with my heart palpitating, my mind recoiling as if I spotted a rattlesnake. After a while, when I get up my nerve, I reach for it with a trembling hand. It feels abnormally cold in my fingers, as if it's been stored in a freezer. But it hasn't been in a freezer. It's been where I left it, in a drawer in my office desk. And now it's here, in my car. The car parked outside the bar that Aiden lives above. I glance around, but there's no one in sight. The parking lot and sidewalks are deserted. There are a few cars parked along the street, but they're down a block or so near a bakery. Truly frightened, I stare at the coin again. One of only two things happened here. Either I took it from my office drawer and don't remember doing that, or leaving it on the dash, or someone else took it from the drawer and left it here for me to find, which makes no sense. Who would do that? And why? Starting to shake, I drop the coin into the cup holder between the front seats and reach behind the passenger seat for my purse. I only brought the key inside to Aiden's with me last night, but now I can't be certain if I locked the car doors or not. Did I unlock them a moment ago? I don't know. I don't remember. How could I not remember? As I dig into my purse for my cell phone, my panic builds. I navigate to the security app and load it. I curse when I realize I'll have to rewind about 12 hours of video feed to see if anyone was in the house while I was gone. "But that can't be possible," I whisper. "The alarm would have been triggered." Which means I would have received a call from Jake's security company, but there isn't one. The notifications are blank. So the only remaining possibility is that I left the coin here and forgot. I lean my forehead against the steering wheel, close my eyes, and take deep breaths, trying not to hyperventilate. This memory problem has to be caused by more than stress, but I'm extremely wary of doctors. Both my parents' deaths were caused by medical misdiagnosis. My mother's when her doctor misdiagnosed her lung cancer symptoms as asthma, and my father's when his doctor told him those chest pains he'd been having for the past 12 hours were nothing more than heartburn. The doctor prescribed antacids when in fact the culprit was a heart attack. By the time Dad was admitted to the emergency room, it was too late. And didn't I read somewhere that most deadly infections people get are picked up inside hospitals? You need help, I tell myself. Stop rationalizing. But what would I even tell a doctor? "Hi, I'm Kayla. I've been hearing strange noises in my house. Jars fly out of my kitchen cupboards on their own. My memory has more holes in it than a spaghetti strainer. I've got a new pen pal in prison. And I started an intense sexual affair 3 weeks after my husband died with a man who calls me his bunny rabbit." And let's not forget the mysteriously reappearing Buffalo Nickel and the weird guy in the hat who spied on me from behind a tree and didn't leave any footprints behind. In mud. Psych ward, here I come. Just breathe, Kayla. Just calm down and breathe. Back at the house. I'm worried I might not have armed the alarm before I left, but it's working as it should. I enter in my code to reset it and stand in the foyer listening. For what, I don't know. The house is silent. When I enter the kitchen, I half expect to see more open drawers and cupboards, but nothing is amiss. I go from room to room checking things out until I'm satisfied there are no boogeymen hiding in closets or behind doors. Only, I'm not really satisfied. I'm paranoid, and I don't know what to do about it. So I do what any rational person would and pour myself a glass of wine. Then I lock myself in my office and force myself to work, ignoring the disturbing fact that I'm drinking wine before noon and trying to pretend it's normal behavior, when in reality, everybody knows denial about your drinking habits is a total red flag for alcohol use disorder. Oh, who cares? I mutter, glaring at my drawing board. I've got bigger things to worry about. After an hour, I give up. I drop my pen and rub my eyes, then go into the kitchen and refill my wine glass. Leaning against the counter, I hit the rewind button on the security app on my phone and settle in for some high-speed backward video viewing. I have a bad feeling that daily reviewing of the damn camera feed is about to become my new hobby. It takes a while to get through it all from the time I left last night to when I returned this morning, but I find nothing unusual. Around dawn, two squirrels chased each other across the driveway. Just after midnight, a fat raccoon trundled out from the woodpile on the back porch and wandered away into the darkness. Other than that, everything was still. It isn't until I return to my office with another glass of wine that I see something interesting. A little blonde boy about 5 or 6 years old plays by himself on the back lawn. Dressed in a red jacket, matching pants, and yellow rain boots, he runs around grinning, chasing leaves, and throwing them into the air. He falls at one point, screaming with laughter as he tumbles face first into the grass, then rolls over and waves at the sky. Staring at him through the window, I wonder if a new family moved into the neighborhood. Or maybe someone's grandchild is visiting? I can't think of anyone nearby who has little kids. But why would his mother think it was a good idea to take this kid to play on my back lawn? The house sits in the middle of 2 wooded acres. Will you have to make an effort to get here? Unless they walk down the beach? And where is his mother anyway? There's no adult in sight. Just this jolly little preschooler tearing up my grass. Sighing, I set the wine glass on my desk and leave the room. I pass through the kitchen on the way to the laundry room, then go through the garage and out the side door to the backyard. When I look around, however, the kid has disappeared. I holler, "Hello? Anybody out here?" My only answer is the lonely cry of a seagull circling far overhead. Chilled because I forgot to put on a jacket, I walk all the way around the back of the house and look down toward the street. I see no one. The driveway is empty. I look back toward the beach and it's empty too. So are the woods on either side of the house. Irritated, I mutter, "Where'd you go, you little fucker?" The last thing I need is some dumb kid breaking his leg on a rock he tripped over on my property. I can see the lawsuit coming a mile away. I spend another 15 minutes hunting for him, then give up and go back inside for more wine. Then I get the idea to review the camera feed from the last half hour to see where little Blondie went. But when I open the app, all I get is static. The screen shows nothing but pixelated snow. Great, the security system works as well as the electrical system. Maybe I should just sell the place and move. Feeling defeated, I go back to my desk and work for the rest of the day. The next morning, I wake to the sound of the alarm screaming. Disoriented, I jolt upright in bed and look around in panic. Gray daylight sifts through the cracks in the curtains. My robe is where I left it, draped over the arm of a chair. Nothing in the room appears to be out of order except for the ear-piercing shriek of the security alarm. In my panic, I fall out of bed. I hit the floor with a thud but scramble to my feet, adrenaline burning through my veins. Someone broke into the house. Fuck, 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 holy fuck, someone broke into the house. The noise cuts off as abruptly as it began, leaving my ears ringing with the silence. Hyperventilating, I move quietly to the door, open it a crack, and listen. Within moments, I hear a female voice grouse.
"Blasted thing. What a bloody racket. I'll go deaf, and that's a fact."
I nearly faint with relief. It's Fiona. Throwing open the door, I walk down the hall and lean over the balcony that overlooks the first floor.
"Fiona, it's you!"
She screams and jumps, whirling around. Gazing up at me from the foyer, she presses a hand over her heart. Looking cross, she says,
"It's 10 o'clock Monday morning, dear. Of course it's me."
10 o'clock? I repeat, astonished. I can't believe I slept this late, but get distracted from that thought when another occurs to me. How did you know how to turn off the alarm? A strange pause follows. It seems fraught.
I entered the code.
How did you know what code to enter? Another strange pause follows. She asks hesitantly,
How do you think I knew it?
Oh, shit. I told her the code. That's how she knows it. I told her and forgot. I pass a hand over my face and exhale. Because I gave it to you. Of course I did. Sorry. When I look at her again, she appears relieved.
No need to apologize.
A clap of thunder rumbles through the sky. The gray morning is about to erupt into rain again. And whatever this creeping memory loss is of mine, it seems to be accelerating.
Are you quite well, dear?
Asks Fiona, tilting her head and peering at me with an expression of concern. After a moment, I say, No, I don't think I am. I don't think I'm well at all. She nods as if she already knows my condition is poor but didn't want to say anything and risk offending me. She sets her bags on the floor next to the console table, shrugs out of her woolen jacket, unwinds the scarf around her neck, lays both on the console, then looks back up at me. In a kind tone, she says,
Why don't we sit in the kitchen and have a cup of tea and a chat?
Without waiting for an answer, she turns and walks away. Feeling queasy, I go downstairs. I find her in the kitchen, setting a teapot on the stove. She lights the burner, then sits down at the table and folds her hands together on top. Chewing on a thumbnail, I take the chair across from her. I think she's going to ask me about my health or suggest a nice vacation in the nearest mental institution, but she surprises me by saying gently,
I've always liked you, Kayla. You're a bright, gifted young woman.
Flattered but also taken aback, I say, Well, thank you. I've always liked you too. She smiles and nods in a grandmotherly way. I look askance at her. Why do I feel like there's more coming?
Because there is. And I want you to remember that this comes from a place of concern for you and your well-being.
I prop my elbows on the table and drop my head into my hands.
I know I'm a mess. Believe me, I'm aware.
I don't think you're a mess. I think.
When she pauses too long, I glance up at her, nervous. On her face is a curious expression. It's part concern, but mostly anticipation. At least I think that's what it is. She's staring at me with a weird light in her eyes, like a person with a gambling addiction looks at a slot machine. What? She says ominously,
I think something is troubling you.
I blink. I don't mean to be rude, but that seems obvious. She shakes her head.
I'm not speaking about the loss of your husband, dear.
Okay. Then what are you talking about?
Well, I don't exactly know, but if there's anything you'd like to get off your chest, I'm here for you. I'm a very good listener.
I stare into her piercing blue eyes and wonder what the fuck she's talking about. Leaning forward, she prompts,
Has anything unusual happened lately? In the house, I mean.
All the hairs on my arms prickle. A tiny shiver of fear runs over my skin.
Yes, I can see that it has, she says softly. Why don't we talk about that?
My heart decides now would be a good time to do some acrobatics. My stomach follows suit and twists into a tight knot. My mouth goes dry, my hands tremble, and a high-pitched buzzing noise rings in my ears. I whisper,
How did you know?
Her smile is gentle.
I grew up with this kind of thing. Ghosts are quite common in the old country. Scotland is one of the most haunted places in the world.
I blink again, sure I've misheard. Outside, another clap of thunder rolls through the sky, rattling the windows. An odd pressure builds in the room, a friction, as if the air itself has become charged.
Excuse me, but did you just say ghosts?
Quite so, my dear.
I sit back in my chair, laughing a little. I don't believe in ghosts. She gazes at me steadily.
What you believe is immaterial, Kayla, because ghosts most definitely believe in you.
Rain begins to fall, pattering softly against the kitchen window panes. Drops slide down the glass like tears. When I don't say anything, Fiona fills the silence.
Let me give you a few examples, then you can tell me if I'm off my rocker. As your expression suggests, have you recently been hearing strange noises? Like creaking floorboards, for instance. Have you felt unusual cold drafts? Had the eerie sense you were being watched but no one was there?
I swallow. It's becoming difficult to draw breath. The high-pitched ringing in my ears grows louder.
What about strange problems with electricity? Flickering lights, exploding bulbs, the telly turning itself on or off?
It's an old house. It has lots of problems. Blowing right past that, she continues her assault on my sanity.
Perhaps you've been having strange dreams. Maybe objects are being moved, appearing in places other than where you put them.
She must catch something in my expression because she leans closer.
Books falling off shelves? Furniture rearranging itself in the middle of the night?
My voice faint, I say. A jar of honey flew out of the cupboard on its own. A coin I put in one place showed up in another, and all the kitchen drawers and cupboards were standing wide open in the morning one day when I came down. She nods solemnly.
What about strange scents? Perfumes or strong odors? Any of that?
I think of the odd burning smell when I run the dryer. The smell Eddie couldn't find a source to, or any of the other electrical problems in the house, and feel as if I might jump right out of my skin. When the kettle on the stove whistles, I do jump. Suddenly, I'm scared witless. Fiona rises from her chair, gets two mugs from a cabinet, and pours hot water into both. The tea bags go in next. Then she sets one of the mugs in front of me and sits back down across from me. As if she hasn't just given me an aneurysm, she says,
"It would be proper with a drop of milk, but I've gone lactose intolerant in my old age. Would you like some?"
I barely manage a shake of my head.
"No, no, dear. Please don't be frightened. I know being haunted is a bit much for our 21st century minds to deal with, but we'll get through it together."
Maybe I'm still asleep. Maybe this is just a bad dream. Maybe all that wine I had yesterday went to my head and killed more than the usual amount of brain cells. Ever the practical one, Fiona turns businesslike.
"What we need is a seance."
I say flatly, "That's ridiculous."
"No, the federal tax rate is ridiculous. This is simply a situation that needs to be remedied."
She sips her tea and makes a yummy noise.
"As soon as possible, I might add. The longer a spirit is trapped in this dimension, the greater the odds it will never be able to move on."
"Fiona, I don't have a ghost in the house." She clucks her tongue in disapproval at my tone.
"I know it's alarming, dear, but please try to control yourself. Scots have a genetically built-in aversion to overt shows of emotion, and I'd hate to think less of you over something so minor as being haunted. Now, what about visual disturbances? Have you seen anything strange around the place?"
Into my mind flashes an image of the strange, hostile man in the hat hiding behind the tree who left no footprints behind. Another image comes, the one of the little blonde boy playing in the yard. The boy my security camera didn't catch, presenting me instead with a recording of static. Horror creeps over me, starting at my feet and slowly moving up my body until I'm gripped in a cold, tight, skeleton hand of fright. As if her case is closed, Fiona says sagely,
"Ah."
Chilled to the bone, I say, "It's impossible. Ghosts don't exist." Fiona smiles. A bass rumble of thunder rolls through the sky. The rain increases, peppering the windows and drumming against the roof. Then the overhead lights turn themselves off and on three times, like a smug supernatural fuck you. 22.
"Now listen carefully,"
says Fiona, turning businesslike again.
"I need to tell you something important."
"What is it?"
"No matter what happens, don't tell the ghost it's dead. They have no idea they're no longer living."
I'm convinced we're both in a padded cell somewhere having this conversation. That's really the only reasonable explanation. When I sit there staring at her in disbelief, she continues,
"Ghosts are simply souls with a story to tell. When a person dies tragically or violently, their spirit often can't move on. They have unfinished business that keeps them tied to this realm. Until they get closure, they will remain here, haunting the people and places that meant the most to them while they were alive."
"Are you even listening to the words coming out of your mouth?" She arches a brow.
"I'm aware this is difficult for you, dear, but there's no need to be snippy."
Chastened, I sigh. "Sorry."
"As I was saying..." "What was I saying?"
"Ghosts need closure."
"Yes, that's right. And until they get it, they're stuck here, wandering the earth in misery."
She stares at me expectantly. "You're saying we need to help this ghost who doesn't exist and definitely is not haunting me to get closure?"
Fiona beams. "Well done."
"Stupendous. She wants me to give up art and become a guide for lost spirits. I hope you won't be offended by this, but that is the dumbest thing I've ever heard. I can tell by her expression that she's definitely offended. She sniffs, lifting her nose.
All right, if you don't want my help, I can't force you to take it.
She stands, takes her mug to the sink, and dumps the rest of her tea down the drain. Rinsing out the mug, she says over her shoulder,
Do you need your office cleaned today?
Really? We're just going to act like this conversation never happened? She turns to level me with a cool stare.
I was under the impression that wallowing in denial is where you're most comfortable.
Ouch, that was harsh.
I'm not one to sugarcoat things.
I say dryly, Gee, I couldn't tell. We gaze at each other across the room until I finally give in. Okay, even if I did go along with this insanity, which I'm not, I'm just saying if, what then? Her expression softens. She sets the mug in the drain rack next to the sink and returns to her chair.
Then we attempt to contact the spirit to see what it wants.
You're back to the seance thing again.
Correct.
We gaze at each other across the table as I attempt to retrieve my brain from outer space where it went for a nice rest from this ridiculous conversation. Or maybe I should just go to see a therapist. That seems as if it might be money better spent.
Oh, there won't be a charge, my dear, if she could do it as a personal favor.
Who's she?
My sister. She's a medium.
By this point, this new tidbit of information doesn't even faze me. Of course she is. How does one get into that line of work?
Well, you're born into it, aren't you? It's a gift.
I repeat doubtfully. A gift.
Something that comes naturally, like your artistic ability.
Only with dead people.
Exactly.
And she can guarantee this non-spirit who isn't haunting me will leave after that?
Oh, no. That's entirely up to the spirit. And there's always a chance that...
She chews on the inside of her cheek. Don't leave me hanging. I'm strung out enough as it is.
Well, not all spirits are friendly ones. Some of them are vengeful and full of rage.
I chuckle. Oh, so they used to work at the DMV. Her blue eyes glitter. Her voice drops.
This isn't a joke, my dear. One must exercise extreme caution when dealing with beings from another realm. They're very unpredictable. If provoked to anger, they're quite capable of violence.
The shiver of fear I felt earlier returns, skimming over my flesh and leaving goosebumps in its wake. How can a ghost be capable of violence if it doesn't have a body?
The same way it can rearrange furniture or knock something off a shelf.
I don't understand. She gathers her thoughts for a moment.
A spirit is energy manifest in itself, akin to an electrical storm gathering force until it discharges a bolt of lightning. When a spirit is upset, that emotion, that energy is transformed into a physical outcome. Hence your open cupboards and drawers.
She glances upward.
Or your flickering lights.
I stare at the ceiling in trepidation, half expecting to see a grinning green goblin floating over my head. So, theoretically speaking, not that I believe any of this, the spirit who lives in my house is mad? She replies softly.
I'd say the spirit who lives in this house is bloody furious.
When I look at her, startled, she adds in an offhand tone,
Or spirits, plural. This house is very old. There's really no telling how many restless souls are lurking about. Could be dozens.
Dozens? You're saying I'm living in hell?
Hell is a state of mind, my dear. Reality is simply what we believe it to be. Each of us makes our own truths, even ghosts.
That statement is the most unsettling thing she said so far. Okay, but I still don't believe in ghosts. Wouldn't that put a damper on a seance? Fiona lifts her brows.
Do you suppose God is affected one way or another if people don't believe in him?
I mean, maybe his feelings get hurt? She sighs.
I can't make cookies without sugar, my dear.
Great, now you're speaking in code. Also, you totally can make cookies without sugar. They're called sugarless cookies. Diabetics eat them all the time.